Welcome back to Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Andy Bulbarch saddled up alongside Steve Bailey, filling in for Matt Douglas today. You have us until 6, and time for us to return to the hotline as we bring in Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio, fresh off his trip out to Sin City. Adam, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Andy. How about you, man?
Oh, so far so good, hanging in there. And I did enjoy the first full day of Major League Baseball yesterday, although the end result with the Tribe wasn't exactly what we wanted. And, you know, I want to start there if we can for just a second. I know this wasn't what we intended to talk about, but you had made mention yesterday in an article that you wrote talking about some baseball betting tips for opening day, and there was obviously a full slate yesterday. You talked about how you didn't necessarily like that matchup for the Tribe and Twins yesterday. Why was that? Because, I mean, you nailed a number of different things yesterday, from Corey Kluber not necessarily always getting off on the right foot in April, though he pitched well yesterday. You talked about Berrios as well and just how he certainly appeared like he was going to be a budding star for the Twins, and he was sensational yesterday. That combined with a lot of uncertainties with the Indians' offense. You know, what were some of those elements at play yesterday that made you feel the way you did going into the opener for the Tribe?
Yeah, I mean, it is one of those things. We've kind of seen this under Terry Francona, where the Indians do get off to a little bit of a slow start usually and then wind up playing really, really well in the second half. So this isn't anything new. And, you know, of course, they're missing kind of their, their vocal leader in Francisco Lindor. So that weakens the lineup, but I think it also kind of weakens what the dynamics are to some degree in that clubhouse. But you know, when you talk about Corey Kluber, I mean, look, for whatever reason, April really hasn't been his month. He did pitch really well for the most part yesterday and kind of got screwed there on a couple of calls that probably should have gone his way that didn't. But the big part of the handicap for me was Jose Berrios. I mean, this is a kid who I think the big step is coming here for him this season. You talk about the Twins going all in with analytics, and really, for me, if I see a pitcher lowering his fastball usage, I'm really interested in that guy. And Corey Kluber is going the opposite direction. He's throwing more sinkers, throwing more four-seamers. He's inducing a lot more contact, not as many strikeouts. That's concerning to me. Berrios yesterday, less than 50% of his pitches were fastballs. And last year, 60.5% were fastballs. So he's going heavy curveball. He's going with more changeups. That leads to more strikeouts, leads to weaker contact. I expect him to really have a breakout season here, be a problem for the Indians, not just this year, but also in future years. So, it's just not a great matchup for the Indians. He doesn't walk a whole lot of guys. The Indians are going to have to draw walks this year just because of the way the lineup is constructed. So, not a great matchup for them, and hopefully they can bounce back tomorrow.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Hopefully with the matinees coming up tomorrow and Sunday, the Tribe can certainly turn things around a little bit and get their bats going. But, I want to talk about some baseball. We'll do that a little bit later on, some games tonight. But I also want to get into the NCAA slate tonight as well. Some really good matchups. Second half in the final stages here, the round of the Sweet 16, before we get into the Elite Eight likes tomorrow. But we begin with tonight's matchups, and a really good one in Michigan State and LSU. Who do you like in this particular matchup?
I mean, it's hard not to like Michigan State here in this one. I mean, Sparty has such a big coaching advantage with Tom Izzo going up against the interim head coach for LSU. And one of the things that we kind of talked about when I was out in Vegas, and one of the things I've talked about on my show this week, is that it's really hard to quantify just how much of an edge that is for Michigan State. And with the line here at 6.5, I've even heard some people say it's probably a 4 or 5 point edge for Michigan State just from a coaching standpoint. Then you look at this game, and schematically, it does not set up well for LSU. LSU has to get to the rim. They're not a great jump shooting team. Over 14% of their two-point offense has come via the dunk. Well, Michigan State doesn't let you inside. Less than 5% of opponents' two-pointers on dunks. They're the fourth best team in the country in field goal percentage defense at the rim. LSU's going to have to make jumpers here. They're not going to get as many offensive rebounds. So it's not just the Izzo factor, and I think Izzo will have a good game plan for them. It's simply that from a schematic standpoint, LSU just doesn't match up well tonight. So it's a big number. It's a little bit scary of a number here at this point in time with the top 16 teams left for the Sweet 16 pretty much, but it'd be Sparty for me tonight. It's the only way I could look.
And one of the other games going on tonight is a game that involves two electric offenses, Auburn and North Carolina, and those teams certainly love to get up and down the floor. And a lot of people focusing on this game think that the over might be the way to go. Do you agree with that?
the total movement on this game has been fascinating. It was 160.5 at the open. It got bet all the way up to 167.5. Now it's starting to come back down a little bit. And in fact, it's kind of funny because Bruce Pearl went on Scott Van Pelt's show, you know, who does the Midnight Sports Center, and basically told people to bet the over. And people listened to him, apparently. But now we're starting to see some buyback on the under. This is a really hard game for me of the four games tonight because Auburn shoots a ton of three-pointers. And if they go in, they haven't shot at not only the upset, but also at a very high-scoring game here. 49.7% of Auburn's field goal attempts coming from beyond the arc. So if they shoot it well, they're very much in this game. If they don't, North Carolina's going to get a lot of second-chance points. They're one of the top offensive rebounding teams year in and year out. Auburn's a bad defensive rebounding team. So this is one where it's basically contingent on how Auburn shoots the basketball. And those really aren't the types of games I like, where it's such a high variance type of environment where, you know, is the rim soft? Does Auburn shoot well in a neutral site they're not used to playing in? You know, I think I would have to take North Carolina here for those reasons, but it also doesn't surprise me if Auburn shoots, you know, 50% from three and pulls the upset.
Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. And, you know, to get at some of these other games going on tonight in the final round of the Sweet 16, you know, Duke taking on Virginia Tech. And I think a lot of people looking at this thinking to themselves, is it safe to bet on Duke because of the way they played against Central Florida last week? A lot of folks believe that was going to be a difficult matchup for Duke regardless because that's a tough team to attack the rim against, and that's kind of what Duke does. Is this a more favorable matchup for Duke against Va Tech tonight?
I think it's favorable in the sense for two reasons. One, Virginia Tech doesn't have a guy that's 7'6" in the middle. So, you know, obviously that's going to help them. I mean, most teams don't have a Taco Fall. The other thing is that they see Virginia Tech year in and year out. So there's no unknown here. You know, you talk about playing Central Florida, a team that you virtually never play, with that quick turnaround from the first round to the second round. And yeah, they were going to beat the 16 seed badly no matter who it was. But still, for Mike Krzyzewski, you don't know who you're playing. You don't know if you're playing VCU's pressing defense or if you're playing UCF. They wind up getting UCF. They get the big scare. Probably should have lost the game, to be totally honest with you. So a lot of people are saying, well, that was Duke's scare. Now Duke is woken up. They're invested in the tournament. They're more engaged. I think this is a tough matchup for them. Even though they see Virginia Tech, Virginia Tech is one of those teams that forces you to take three-pointers. On the season, they're second in three-point rate against. 50.4% of opponent shots coming from beyond the arc against Virginia Tech. Duke's one weakness, they don't shoot the basketball well from the outside. 329th in the country in three-point percentage success rate. So if they're making shots, they could run away and cover this game. If they're not, this one's probably too close for comfort too. So I look more at the under for this game, under 143, than I do for a side. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Duke struggles again here tonight.
Interesting. And, you know, I think when we get to this point in the tournament, you're going to have some terrific matchups, and sometimes you get some familiarity, sometimes you get some unfamiliarity as well. And, you know, taking a look to tomorrow, got a couple of really interesting matchups tomorrow. Tennessee, of course, saw their season come to an end as they tried to come from behind and almost came all the way back to defeat Purdue yesterday. But we've got a couple of interesting matchups tomorrow in the first half of the Elite Eight. What kinds of early action do you like on both of tomorrow night's games?
Well, we'll start with the Purdue-Virginia game that you mentioned here. And, you know, these are two head coaches that have a lot to prove at this time of the year. Matt Painter can get his team to the Sweet 16. He can't get them past that point. This year, of course, he's in the Elite Eight, so we'll see what he's able to do. And then Tony Bennett at Virginia. I mean, year in and year out, Virginia's a top-five team. They've been the best team in the ACC over the last several years in the aggregate. But, again, they get to the tournament, and it's very hard for them. Part of that is because they play such a slow-paced type of game that, you know, they have so many limited offensive possessions. If they get into close games and they can't score, then they wind up, you know, falling victim to upsets. This is a tough game. This is a very tough game because I don't know how much people believe in Purdue, but I also don't know how much people believe in Virginia. And quite frankly, I don't know how much I believe in either one of these teams. I mean, for Virginia here, if Kyle Guy shoots the basketball well, their offense is going much better. He hasn't done that to really any degree here in this tournament. Purdue also goes through one guy in Carson Edwards. This basically may just end up being who's better between Carson Edwards and Kyle Guy, and that's the winner of the game.
All right, we'll turn our attention now to some baseball. And, you know, for you and I, we're big baseball guys, certainly love this time of the year. Opening day has now come and gone. We focus our attention on a pretty light slate tonight. There's one matchup I kind of like quite a bit. St. Louis and Milwaukee. I know you went into great detail about this particular matchup, why you like St. Louis because of some of the injuries, especially to the back end of that Milwaukee bullpen. Who do you like in this matchup particularly and why?
Yeah, I like St. Louis here tonight, and this is one where the line has moved a fair amount. Milwaukee opened in the minus 125 range. They're down to about minus 105. A lot of places showing minus 105 on both sides for this game, which makes it essentially a coin flip with, you know, a little bit of a house edge because they have to keep the lights on. This is one where I love Jack Flaherty, the starter for the Cardinals. He's a guy I talked about as a potential Cy Young candidate, a guy that, you know, I did like when you could get his price in the 60-1 range on some of the markets that were out there, and I certainly liked his odds at that price. But this is a guy that records a lot of strikeouts. He's very, very good against left-handed hitters, which is something you don't normally see from a young right-hander. A lot of guys struggle with that platoon split. He's not one of them. And then on the Milwaukee side here, Freddie Peralta is a guy that, look, he's got a fantastic fastball, but he throws it 77% of the time, and then he mixes in a curveball, and that's about it. He's kind of a two-pitch pitcher, very heavy on the fastball usage, not a whole lot left to the imagination there. So even though his fastball is very good, I think St. Louis has an okay matchup here against him. But ultimately, you talk about this game, and even if these two starters cancel out, St. Louis's bullpen is not great, but Milwaukee probably missing their three best relievers tonight. Josh Hader, who threw two innings yesterday, only worked five back-to-back appearances last season. One of them was April 22nd. The other four, June 27th, August 5th, August 20th, August 30th. So once they got into the playoff push, they would use Hader back-to-back days. They're not going to do that in April, March, I guess, as the case is here. I don't think they're going to do that in March. Corey Knebel's probably going to have Tommy John surgery. Jeremy Jeffress is already hurt. So Milwaukee's at a bullpen disadvantage tonight, which is very rare. I think St. Louis has the better starting pitcher as well. But I do like the Cardinals in tonight's matchup.
All right, we'll do one more baseball matchup before we cut you loose here. You also mentioned in your daily baseball betting tips today that you like the over, especially in this Detroit-Toronto matchup. Why is that?
Yeah, this is one of those games where actually this line, it came down to 8.5 on the total. Now it's back up to 9. So this one has moved around a little bit. The first five innings bet the line is 5. So maybe that's something you'd rather look at here in this one. But, you know, Matt Boyd is a guy, pitches up there in Detroit. For anybody that's been to Comerica Park, and I imagine in this area a lot of people have, the outfield is enormous. I mean, it is huge. There's a lot of ground to cover there. And Boyd is an extreme fly ball pitcher. Well, that doesn't help so much in Toronto because Toronto was a top five offensive park on fly balls and line drives last season. So a bad park factor really here for Boyd. Not a great matchup either because Toronto hits a lot of fly balls, a lot of them to the pull side as well. And then for Toronto with Matt Shoemaker on the mound, a big unknown. You know, he's only worked about 108 and two-thirds innings over the last 2 years. He's pitched in Anaheim his whole career. This is a different park factor. It's not as pitcher-friendly. I know that both of these offenses aren't particularly strong, but, you know, I think that because of the park, because of the way that this game is set up, I do like there to be some runs tonight.
Adam, as always, we appreciate the time, my friend. We'll do it again next week.
Sounds good, Andy. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Again, Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. We need to step aside and take a break. Steve Bailey and I will come back with more after this here on AM 930 WEOL.